It's Wednesday, June 23rd, 2010, and you're listening to episode 195 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
I'm still Wayne.
My name's Pat.
I'm Dave.
And this is Chris, back in coach here at Fear the Boot.
That's right, you're a second-class citizen.
Stuck in your rectum again, Chris.
Rectum.
Damn near killed him.
Were you guys planning that?
Are you kidding them?
Yes.
That's rehearsing
that before the show?
It's like inhaling and exhaling. What are you talking about? If anytime anybody says rectum, you always have to follow it up with a rectum. Damn near killed him.
I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I am actually adopted. So for all we know, Chris could be my grandpa.
This is true.
That's very true.
Well, great grandpa. Yeah. So, yes.
I'd like to welcome Dave from the Iron Agenda, War Machine, and Hordes podcast back to Fear the Boot.
Thank you.
Hi, Dave. It's good to be back.
We've wrapped up the Reina's Wings charity drive, and I'm pleased to announce that our community was able to pull together about $2,000 for the March of Dimes, which is great.
Wow.
That is fantastic.
From looking at the prize support, it looks like we have enough stuff so that everyone who donated will get something. So over the next week or two, I'll be getting in touch with all the donors to make sure they get something. If you do not hear from me, then get in touch with Necro, let him know who you were, and make sure that he gets that email address and whatnot to me. Moving on to RPG stuff, there is something we observed in our most recent game. We just started our campaign on Sunday.
We did.
And something happened that was...
Did you guys like it? Was it good?
It was good.
Chris, what'd you think?
Talking about it for days.
I know.
What I'll honestly say is that I had honest pangs of sadness as I saw your various Facebook updates and pictures and stuff. And I just, it really made me realize how much I miss sitting around that table. I really do. And I am in my efforts to try and find myself a new group, but I was feeling the game in love coming north up I-35 there.
I'm pretty sure it was just agita, Chris, but
It could have been a little indigestion or gas. I'm not really sure which. But it looked like it was fun.
I think the party makeup is perfect. There was a warlock, a psionic warrior, a wolf, the Burger King.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And some old white castle.
A grell. Yes. I know that Chris can find a certain fondness for this game I'm running because I'm kicking it old school D&D here. I mean, we're doing 3.5, but I want Wayne to have the true D&D experience.
So I actually make him play a bard.
Well, yeah. I have a GM screen, which is, of course, from HeroQuest. It's like 3 inches tall and totally worthless.
Oh, yeah.
Has all the wrong stuff on it. Love it. And I told the guys that they can use any model they want for their character, but I am providing my own models, which is hilarious because I don't own any models, and we game at Dave's house, and Dave, you have hundreds of painted very, very good painted model. Dave wins, of course he wins, painting contests. I don't even know why they bother, but...
You know what's funny? I go through all of those painted models, all these really beautiful looking things, and what do I find that I absolutely love? This cheap little plastic thing that probably came from a Happy Meal or something. Mm.
But you know what, though? That stuff's magic because I'm sitting there, and like I said, I was looking at your Facebook pictures of this, and yeah, you had a bunch of chess pieces behind your DM screen. But that's cool because that really is old school because it's like you gathered whatever you had around and you
that's
made
right.
do with it and you used it, and it didn't matter because it was just a physical representation. But the images in your mind are always better looking than the miniatures anyway, and so that's cool.
Chris, no, that's not it. You just saw the pictures and you really thought that we were playing Twilight. You just didn't know. I know how you think.
I did, and then I was thinking about Pat being Edward, and so.
Yeah.
I imagine the rippling abs
or shimmer,
on that
or whatever
bishop.
Hell it is.
The first D&D game I ever played, we had exactly that. They had little miniatures to represent their guys, and the only time they used the miniatures like that, what is your marching order? The marching order was very, very, very important with this group.
Well, sure, because something's running up the hallway or down the hallway.
Yeah, who steps on the trap first?
Exactly.
All that, very important.
Exactly.
That marching order. And then they used chess pieces for all the monsters. It's very, well, I wouldn't say it's nostalgic because it was Ravenloft and really awful game, but still, to me, that is old school D&D.
My old school experience was HeroQuest miniatures.
That's
so
right.
Slightly upscale, but barely.
Yeah, yeah.
I still use those.
Me too.
But what this game brought up, apart from the nostalgia, is that RPGs have this really strange ability to make absolute catastrophe somehow extremely fun. This game ended. Its epilogue was a clusterfuck.
Yes, it was.
We thought it was over, and then everything hit the fan.
So, to explain briefly what happened, our party's going along down this trail, down this road.
I guess it's worth mentioning we're a party of wandering minstrels.
Yes, not adventurers.
We are not adventurers.
Right, but our little minstrel band or whatever is going down this road, and we happen across an old temple. And,
yeah, like some sort of ruins.
Yeah, and what Chad had put in there just kind of for, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of a gag, but not exactly.
Irony.
It was irony. That's a good word.
I put in there an in-joke for myself.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if anybody else would get it.
We run across a typical adventuring party.
Yes.
Who had basically gone down into a typical dungeon, had a party wipe, or nearly had a party wipe, and the last two survivors are barely making it out.
Right.
And we happen across these guys who know a lot about what's going on in the area, had some piece of plot that we never ended up getting.
Yeah, the minstrels don't actually go into the dungeon. They just were camping for the night, and just unbeknownst to them, happened to be at the entrance to this underground crypt.
And so these last two survivors come out, undead in tow.
Yelling and screaming, bleeding, yeah.
We run down and save them, and everything's basically going well. We win the fight. We found out in the course of the fight that our revised characters have significantly improved balance over what we'd been struggling with before.
I might add, before you get to everything going bad, that I even did save one of them myself.
We'll get to you. And
No. He'll get to us.
Yeah. So we go down there, rescue these guys, kill off the undead. Everything's going great. Until in the middle of combat, for some reason, Wayne's character has this psychotic break and starts chasing around one of these guys who's running panicked from the undead, threatening that he's going to kill him if he doesn't stop for a nice chat.
That is not the whole story. The whole story is that these guys worked up the skeletons.
Officer,
if you'd
seen how she burnt that lasagna.
I mean, the idea was, I go to the trouble of saving this wizard. I'm asking him what is going on, because at this point,
who's running panicked from giant undead?
Skeletons are coming
out. He won't stop for tea.
Skeletons are coming out of the ground, and as far as we know, they're going to keep coming out until we find out what these guys did.
Yeah. So at the end of this,
he's running away. He's not going to help.
How dare he?
My character is hauling off one of these two guys that has survived. He got hooked on a fence, was about to get killed. We save him in perfectly good shape, unharmed. He's not being hurt. And then Wayne tells the guy that's running from him, if you don't do what I want, my friend, referring to me, is going to eat your friend.
No, it was my Noel is going to eat your friend.
My Noel. And so at this point, the guy unleashes a lightning bolt, which nearly kills Wayne's character, seriously injures Dave, nearly kills my character, nearly kills this guy's friend that I'm carrying.
No, it kills him.
No, it doesn't.
No, it didn't.
It did kill him.
It did not.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember who killed him.
We went back number-wise after. It was a negative three.
It was negative three.
That's not death.
That's not death.
I thought negative 10.
No. D&D 3.0 and 3.5, you're dead at negative 10 plus your constitution modifier, or minus your constitution modifier, I guess. So, okay. But point being, he was not dead. He was just mortally wounded. At which point, this all breaks down. My character snaps, breaks his neck, and then goes on a killing spree.
And eats the wizard.
But here's the point.
Just gloss over eating the wizard.
Here's the point.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second.
This is an absolute catastrophe.
It's great.
What was intended to be a rescue run to get these two guys out of there instead ends with our party basically, with the exception of Pat, taking a straight down lightning bolt and then killing the only two people who knew anything about the plot that's going on in this area. Our only hook into what's going on. And yet it was probably the most fun I've had gaming since Fear the Con.
I don't think any ending could have been better than that one. I have my story now to tell people that I probably won't tell people because gaming stories are generally boring.
Why is that? I mean, if you sit down,
I have more fun with failures personally.
To paint a fig and you wreck a fig and waste $10, it's not a good thing. If you set out to film an independent movie and you make this abomination, it's not a good thing. Yet for some reason, when you game and completely wreck the situation. We didn't destroy the game or the entire campaign, but we destroyed the situation. It was abject failure. And it was a blast.
I think that there's a big difference in the examples you're setting out there, though, is if I'm painting a fig and I've failed, I'm not done. I keep going. And it's the same thing. Yeah. Like, the game is
these
not
guys are
over.
Dead.
This was a bad situation, but this isn't some movie that's been released and has been panned by critics across the globe. It's one session in. We've got plenty to go from here.
Yeah.
And it'll be more interesting after that.
It's the memory and the story that's created at the time. And for you as an individual, you're safe. You can watch this road accident happen, you know, within your game. And you are completely free from suffering any of the harm. And yet, it becomes a comedy of errors is really what it kind of devolves into. And it then, of course, creates its own memorable experience from that.
You know, and the funny thing was, out of character, I'm thinking about it at the time. You know, I'm choosing why I'm doing what I do. I say the phrase, Chad gives me an out. And I think about taking it because I even thought, I have the charisma. I could just try to calm this guy down. But the more I'm thinking about it, my character's angry. My character thinks this guy is responsible for everything. My character thinks that this guy is trying to run away and not help.
Your character's a sociopath.
I don't think so. But
yeah, no sociopath does.
Exactly.
But, you know, so he decides he is going to threaten him to get the answers he wants.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do that. I never imagined what happened would. But at that point, I'm like, I could back out. But, you know.
He never pictured a wizard casting a spell in an attempt to save his own life and defend his friend.
No.
Which
it's never happened in all of fantasy history.
I'm not a fantasy person. I don't watch fantasy movies. I don't read fantasy stories.
Are you aware of what a wizard is?
Yes.
Are you aware of what friends are?
This is a guy that got ripped out of the ground and tossed. I don't know that he can just cast instantly, but I never even think about him attacking.
I know you're aware of what lightning is now.
Yeah. I never think for a second that the guy is going to attack. But I know things are about to go bad.
Certainly the
when
dots
Chad
got,
gives me a way out.
Yeah, and certainly the dots got connected. Though unfortunately, the dots were you, Dave, his friend, me.
You know what I find great about this is that I was going to have this whole role-playing scene. You know, these guys were going to thank you for what they've done, and they were going to help you, and they were going to guide you. Basically, these guys were going to guide you to the next plot point, and they're dead.
This is both the best and worst thing about gaming, is the depth of the personalized experience that gaming creates. The fact that you can create so much buy-in on the personal, emotive, imaginative level, you can see and feel and experience things in just such an incredible way that I don't get out of movies, I don't get out of books, I don't get out of any other form of entertainment because, excuse the pun, but there is so much that I bring to the table or have to imagine and interpret and carry away from the table.
There's so much buy-in.
But the bitch about that is you have these experiences that you can never share with anyone else because they weren't there, which is why on this show, I mean, I realize we just kind of delved into one, but we've always been hesitant to really get big into game recaps or actual play.
But you know what else it does,
long gaming stories is because no amount of storytelling on my part will recreate for any listener the things that we felt and imagined
because no one
that
has
game.
That buy-in.
But you know what? I think it could.
It brings us all closer because we do have these stories to share with each other.
With each other?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it brings us closer to each other.
Yeah. One of the things they tell you in a marriage is that one of the really important things is to have hobbies that you do together.
Right.
And the reason is because you're creating shared experiences that give you a sense of kinship, that give you things to talk about, a shared frame of reference. And I think as friends, this does the exact same thing, that there is something we experience and build together in a way you don't get from passively consuming a movie or I think even playing a video game.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned marriage, as soon as I got home that night, I tell my wife this whole story, leading all up to what my choices are, and then our conversations afterwards about whether it was evil or not. And my wife comes up to me and says, "Oh, hon, you did exactly what I would have done. You're my little chaotic, evil bard," and kisses me on the forehead and goes back in the living room. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking,
wow, nerds in love.
If she would have done this, damn it, it might have been evil.
Wow.
Well, I just want to make one comment back on something you said about gaming stories. I think they are shareable to an extent. The problem is to really convey the entire experience will take as long as a game session did.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, a lot of stuff that goes on at a game table is, you know, ripe pickings for just any sort of fictional story.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it takes so long to tell that it's not really worth sharing in a social situation.
Right. Well, and I think that with gaming stories, there are stuff that you find cool, and the reasons why you find it cool are things that have to do with your relationship with your friends and what is happening in that moment. And it's just that when you tell it to another person, when you tell it to this third uninvolved person,
whether they're a gamer or not,
then they're missing certain aspects that buy them into it. Basically, it's like, why do they care? Can you make a story cool enough that it causes them to care?
I think that's extremely hard to do. Let me give you the closest example I can come up with outside of gaming.
And you have to do this in less than 5 minutes at a party with a drink in your hand.
Yeah. When I was growing up, there were two separate people I was friends with who went out and saw a lot of movies. And growing up, I did not go out and see a lot of movies for a variety of reasons, most of which boiled down to I came from a family of four kids and my parents just didn't have the money to take us out to the movies all the time. And they would go and see a movie and come home and they thought it was so cool because they had enjoyed the experience of seeing this movie. And they would sit there and recite back to me the entire movie. And, you know, little kids have a crazy memory for stupid details. And they would recite back damn near the entire movie. And I would just have to sit there bored out of my gourd trying to change the subject or get out of there. Sometimes for as much as an hour or two straight as they tried to recount the entirety of this movie. And I didn't care because I didn't see it. I didn't experience the things that they did watching that movie. Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting there on the back porch listening to some little kid rattle off 60 or 90 minutes of a 60 or 90 minute movie.
And then with Dagobah and their plane, it crashed into Swamp. Swamp is a little guy walking around. He's like picking up stuff in their camp and eating it.
Well, no, this is Two Sisters. So it was more like the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants or whatever the hell it's called, or Sex and the City One. So
what?
That's why I didn't like it.
What in the hell are you?
You have two sisters that went to see movies.
I said I had two friends.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
He
me.
Was just thinking about this porno we
Our
saw.
Our podcast first stroke.
He doesn't talk in the show. Do you think he actually listens to?
No, hell no. I was about to say before Pat got a little weird there that the reason why your friends bore you to tears like this is because they care. They love you.
They want to share that experience.
Yeah, they had a great experience, and because they love you, they want you to have this experience in the best way, which is usually not the best way, that they can convey that.
You know, and what I don't understand is we have people asking us to do gaming stories. One of the most requested bonus episodes is
sometimes
that we do
people are wrong.
Yeah, one of the most requested bonus episodes is that we do a gaming story one, and I just don't see how that's interesting to anyone, not being in the group, not being there when it happens.
Well, and I think what would come out of that is that they think it sounds awesome, but then the reality would be that if we were to do it, they probably listen to it and think, oh man, that just wasn't nearly as awesome as I thought it was going to be.
Well,
for the very reasons that
we've
discussed.
It would be like the first 5 minutes of this show we're doing right now, where we just kind of lamely tell this story that we are all excited about and everyone else is like, eh.
Yeah.
I think that up to a certain point, gaming stories are relatable because there's some universal constants that you could talk about. I mean, I could talk about, for example, how one of my characters died on his very first swing that he ever took as a character. And that particular story is funny because I'm not going into details as to what all the stuff was happening and what all of his intricate personal background. I'm talking about the fact that I got a one, I slipped and fell, the DM was a and he killed me as Orc walked past me. And everybody can relate to that kind of thing and still find some humor into it. But when you get into all the minutiae and all the things that you're talking about, all the buy-in that they weren't a part of, that's where it kind of loses some of its appeal.
Well, isn't it strange that we participate in a hobby
about storytelling?
Well, no. Not
that. Stories don't matter beyond the group?
Yeah, that too. I have a follow-up thought on that I'll come back to. But isn't it strange that we participate in a hobby where there really is no common social currency? Because, I mean, heck, it's not just us. I mean, I know on this show we harp on gaming stores and whatnot, but you can go out and buy t-shirts that we did not make that say, no, I don't want to hear about your character.
Right.
Clearly, we are not the only person that feels this. So we've had lots of people hop on the forums.
There also is a difference between telling a gaming story and telling people about your character.
Well, maybe so.
A story may at least have some funny aspects to it.
And a story may also have brevity, whereas I think the presumption in a lot of this is that there's no brevity used. But if you go to a bunch of baseball fans, they could sit down and talk about a game they all watched, and they can all carry on about this unlikely catch or this unlikely play.
Oh my God, and do they ever.
Yeah. But within our hobby, it's painful when people do that.
Yeah.
And so here we are gathered together as people who all commonly love completely separate things we have never experienced together.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize some experiences may be shared in the sense that they're similar or they're archetypal, and therefore there might be some common frame of reference or something relatable. But fundamentally, no one can ever enjoy the game that the five of us played the way that we enjoyed it.
Well, the difference is, Dan, for like the people talking baseball stats, they're not out there playing baseball professionally. For people that are not sharing gaming stories because they find it boring, they're gaming themselves. They're having their own experiences, and there are things that you can share and you can talk about even without getting into a story.
I go one step further. I think that when they're talking about the baseball game, they're talking about like a fixed event that actually happened. Whereas when you talk about role-playing games in general, think about all the different types of games that can be played, from the heavy narrative game to the just combat dungeon delve.
Or even when you get into genres, sci-fi, fantasy, modern, whatever.
It's not as shared. It's not a globally shared experience. I mean, there is a common thread of similarity, but they're not even necessarily the same thing in some cases.
Well, even if you have like three different groups, like all three groups are playing Shadowrun, they're all playing different games of Shadowrun. They're even playing different interpretations of what, say, Shadowrun is.
Well, and also, too, with those other events, there's things that you can reference. You can look at video from this incredible sports play that was made, or you could see pictures of that. You can't show someone a digital picture, say, look at the way these miniatures are arranged. This was so hilarious. Let me tell you about it. It doesn't hold. It doesn't translate.
So here's my follow-up thought. I'm going to leave this kind of as a challenge. I'm curious.
Curious?
I will win this challenge, by the way.
I'm sorry, Dan. I can't even take part in the challenge. If Dave's taking part, can we just give him the victory now?
I'm throwing this one out to the community.
Okay.
Dave still
wins. What
are
your guys' tips for making a gaming story worth telling? For telling one in an entertaining way outside of brevity.
Not what is your best gaming
story. Yeah, not what is your best. If you've got a funny story of catastrophe, feel free to share it. I'm not going to stop anyone from doing that. But outside of brevity, how do you guys communicate these experiences to people that weren't there? Or like us, if you just kind of accepted defeat that this really isn't something you can do.
Maybe we're wrong. Well, maybe we're just doing it wrong.
My wife tells some great stories about Scooby-Thulu. So
yeah.
I know it's possible to not be in there and still have it be interesting.
Well, I think the flip side of it, too, is not necessarily how do you convey it to people, but what gaming stories have you heard, and what was it about those stories that made them interesting?
Why didn't your eyes glaze over?
The flip side of it, you know.
Dave, when we were setting this show up, you said there was something that you wanted us to kick around on mic, which is related to the concept of adapting a character after creation and while the game is in motion to keep the character in sync with the party, the events, that finding ways to take this character and change them around a little bit to keep them in line with where you think things are headed. And I'm curious, you didn't explain in detail what you were getting at, so I'm curious if you could explain that, and then we'll see if we can come up with some kind of advice or thoughts on what you're dealing with.
Sure. You know, I just kind of thought of this as we were sitting around dinner eating, because this is something that we've talked about, at least at the gaming group, if not, I'm not sure you guys talked about it on the mics or not, and that is the characters are flexible. A character, as you define it before you even start playing, doesn't mean that's all the character ever has to be. The situation came up like in the last session, and we have to kind of go into a bit of a gaming story to explain this. And that is the backgrounds of Dan and my characters in particular. Mm-hmm. To make it short, Dan is a member of a monstrous race who ravaged the countryside and fought the human race in a war.
And I'm the wizards for snacks.
Yes, and use wizards for snacks. And my character is a member of a tribe of people who were wiped out by said creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were setting up this campaign, I knew that I was going to be in a party with Dan's character. And I got the impression from his descriptions that he would be a little more civilized than he turned out to be. And, you know, like Dan did things like in this last session, kind of roll to make some willpower checks to keep from going blood frenzy, which totally makes sense with the character, but is leaving me kind of in the spot where I've got to try and come up with a way for my character to want to stay with the group right now. She's pissed off with the one connection she had, which is which is Wayne's character for getting her lightning bolted. And she just watched a creature who she knows members of his race annihilated her entire tribe devour a person. And so right now she's kind of suffering, like, why would I want to stay here with the party? And so rather than necessarily try and come up with an in-character role-playing thing on the spur of the moment, I thought maybe either I have to change something in my background or Dan maybe adjust his character or something so these characters can work together, because we both really enjoy our concepts a lot.
Yeah, or is there like a middle ground that both exactly. find that don't involve changing either character? I'm not even saying that's the way to go.
Well, you know, before we even dig into this, I'm going to have to start by giving Dave some credit and pointing something out that I hope people will take to heart if this applies to you, which is I've played in quite a few games where people have hit this impasse of the character they have. For some reason, they don't feel would stay with the party or work with the situation. And rather than even trying to adapt, they just dig in their heels and say, my character just would not do this, period.
Yeah.
And I have watched games falter, stumble, and die because somebody would not change the character.
Almost just as bad as the person who, for no reason, would stick with the party, but they do just because, well, we're all gaming together.
Yeah. Yeah.
While that allows you to continue on with the plot, the story, and keep on the rails.
Feels artificial.
Yeah, it does. It feels really artificial. Right. It feels real fake.
And there's certainly two concerns here, which is on the one hand, you want the character to make sense, to be organic, to have some kind of personality you can stick with and understand and follow through. But on the flip side, the goal, as we've said countless times over, the only way you win at a role-playing game is to have fun with your friends. And if you destroy that experience by refusing to adapt or digging in and becoming obstinate, that's not helping that experience any. So, Dave, here's my question.
Okay.
What's the way forward?
Well, I don't know. The two options that I thought of offhand would be, I mean, you making your character more civilized, which right. I don't want to impress, you know, my will on you, because I know you enjoy your character as it is. I might be able to go so far as to say that, you know, it wasn't your peoples who destroyed my tribe, but that kind of takes away a little bit of the character that Chad might have been planning on using later, and takes away some potential plot. I'm not sure of a good middle ground. I'd like to find one, though.
Let me ask you this, Dave, because you came up with this character concept originally when Dan was going to be playing an ogre. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so Dan, you made this sort of change not really at the table. I mean, you did it sort of away from the table and said, okay, I'm going to change this, so I'm going with the Nolan's of the ogre, not like with the group. So it almost gets down to a sort of a group template issue. Because I think had we talked about this around the table like we did originally, this might not have been an issue. You would have discovered that at that point and said, oh, this is probably going to be a problem. Do you see what I'm saying? It's sort of a disconnect that way.
I think in some aspect it could be. I think one of the big issues, though, was that talking about Dan's character's background and how it kind of made a deal to save itself at a later point with your character, that impressed upon me kind of the idea of civilizedicity. I'm horrible at the whole
thing. Civility?
There you go. That too. And I was okay with like a brutal character in the party. I think it was the eating of a person, though, that kind of crossed the line from brutal to just outright desecration.
You know, and I have to agree with Dave. I was expecting a much more civil Noel. And I love the character as it is. I don't want it to change. I think it's great.
I do too, and that's the problem.
Yeah. Well,
and here's the great thing, though, about a role-playing game. We are never a prisoner of the things that we have created. And I think this kind of goes back to the obstinance that I talked about earlier, but I've talked to a lot of people where they feel that once something has been put down in a role-playing game, or once something's been envisioned, and maybe hasn't even come out in the game, that they're just locked into it. They can't change it. They can't fix it. They can't address it. And so, Dave, I see several ways forward here. I think the first and simplest of which is what has just occurred around the mics, which is you have communicated not as your character, but as a player in the metagame. And I don't think there's anything wrong with this of, hey, we want to continue building this shared experience, because even if we can't communicate it real well to other people, we're having a hell of a lot of fun doing it. You don't want to change your character. I don't want to change mine, but you have communicated to me in the metagame. I'm concerned that this might cause some kind of tension. And at this point, I don't feel like there's any reason I can't communicate back to you in the metagame that one of the things that my character is dealing with is deep down, he is this bloodthirsty monster, but he's fighting it. There's a part of him that's trying to resist it. And what went through his mind in the last game is he snapped. And the reason at the end of the game he went off by himself is because he hates himself for snapping. This is something where if your character approached him about it, or at, you know, even not necessarily in a friendly fashion, but brought up to him, he would probably tell you, which might give your character some kind of, I don't want to say a sympathy for him, but a better understanding that things are maybe not always exactly what they seem. Or on the flip side, there are things that we can maybe do in the concept.
I can say this. I've actually been thinking about potential immediately upcoming interactions between our character. And I've had stuff in mind. I don't give it away here because it's much more fun to throw out at the table.
Right.
But on the other hand, I just think it's something that the whole group, not just you and I, need to be aware of. So if it comes to the point where it's either tweak a character or someone is leaving the, you know, a character's leaving the party or something like that, it's just the thing that, like, I think is important to be aware of. And that's all I'm saying. Yeah. That's the only reason I really bring
it
up.
What do you guys think of handling this in character, in game? The start of the next game, you throw down and confront Dan.
I was pissed.
What the hell did you just do?
I was pissed you ended the game when you did because we didn't have the opportunity to do that.
Right.
So there you go.
And, well, and I was unaware of the issue.
Yeah.
You know, so.
No, fair enough.
You see, and that kind of brings up my point is that your guys' discussion about this issue and the issue in general, this is something really, I mean, if you're having it in this metagame fashion, which I agree with you, Dan, is absolutely a good thing to do, but the DM or the GM should really be involved in this conversation or at least be aware of it because the opportunities, but to know, as a GM, to know some of these internal struggles that the characters might be facing is a tremendous opportunity to really kind of take the game in a couple of different directions and unexpected directions where some of these issues can really be explored and developed, and you can have a couple of really good sessions out of this.
Because I could do some cool things because you guys have two NPCs, which are just helpers, sort of stagehands, so to speak, who are part of Dave's people. And now that I know this, I could have, they watched the whole thing. They watched everything. One or both of them can come up to you and go, "What in the hell are you?" type thing, or "What do you think you're doing?" Or go to you guys. "I don't want that thing in the group." And then there can be interaction. How would you deal if you're a group of friends that hang out and play video games and then Joe ate somebody? How would you deal with that if you couldn't call the cops?
I'd go get the Pepto.
Salted pork.
You'd talk it out. There'd be some harsh words, well, sure. But
also, as a game master, here's a great opportunity. As Chris was saying, you can mine this for the game.
Right.
Not only can you be part of the solution, as you just described.
Where I can be so part of the problem.
Well, absolutely. In a good
way. That's what I was going to say, is I'm not per se encouraging you to antagonize the problem. But
I will.
But you could, for example, create a plot point which would force my character to make some choices that might bring out a more merciful or civilized side, which would show something different to Dave's character. On our journeys, we come across the site of where his people were slaughtered, and we have to confront what his character has been through. And there's all kinds of ways that you as a game master, now that you know these things are going on, can mine this. And you know what I think is neat about this episode? Because for a little bit there, I was kind of uncertain about how this was going to turn out, because I don't know that ever in our history we've gotten this specific about any of our games.
Right.
But I think what is cool is the fact that what we are doing here is not just reiterating what's occurred, but we're applying our own ideas from 194 previous episodes. Right here on the mics to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a metagame issue that we are discussing.
Are we meta-podcasting?
We are. We talked about the MCSU role-playing games. We're now on the...
Feels so dirty.
We're doing a podcast about role-playing games, about podcasting role-playing games.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Shut up, Dave.
What do you think, I'm Pat?
You're on his mic. You're not allowed to talk.
Shut up, Pat.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pat. Did you want to... You want me before so you actually use the mic?
No, that's
just keep nodding as loudly as you can.
Let me ask you this, and this is sort of advice that you guys as players can kind of give to the people who are listening, too. I'm the Game Master. As the Game Master, I'm asking you two, the players, you have this thing going on. I think it's really cool. There can be some cool stuff out of it, but we need to work on it to make sure it works out right. What do you two need from me?
You know, this sounds like I'm harping on you, but
no,
I think that ending the game where you did was a horrible idea.
It was. My only defense, I was unaware of the issue.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you purposely made a bad decision, but it was something that, like, I really wanted to. We're moving on from our camp spot down to a stream, like 2 miles down. We're going to get cleaned up before we go into town. Yeah. I wanted to go there.
You know why I ended it there? Because I had a goal I wanted to end by 10 o'clock because it was our first game. Right. I didn't want it to go on too long. But there was also...
You have perfectly valid reasons. I'm not...
There's a... Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not... Well, I guess I am
defending
myself.
Speaking as someone who didn't have that issue, I thought it was a great place to end because it ended on a high note.
Yeah.
It ended on something we are still talking about.
The high note of you getting everybody lightning bolted?
You're still talking about it. You're still laughing about it. And it wasn't a wonderful moment. It was a high point.
I've said on past shows, I, as a game master, I love cliffhangers. I love the cliffhanger ending. If I can end every single game on a cliffhanger, I'd be perfectly happy.
This one was just a character cliffhanger instead of a plot cliffhanger.
Well, yeah, And I
have learned how to play the crazy character from you, Chad. It will be hard for you to do a cliffhanger if I keep doing crazy things at the end of the game.
And I was thinking, I want to end this on a cliffhanger as well, but to do that, I need 2 more hours. And yeah. I didn't want to go the 2 more hours. I just kind of ended it. I have to
agree with Dave, but also second what Chad said.
No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, same here. Totally I did not know that issue was going on until just now. Had I known that, because I was pushing, because where we were at, I was excited to keep going, but I recognized I'm self-employed, not everybody is. You guys have to get up in the morning. Yeah. And so it was 10:30. I'm like, okay, if Chad wants to end it here, we can end it here. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep going. Had I known this character issue was occurring, I'd have just sat back down, gotten my dice back out, and been like, we need to keep...
And you know what? I'm even concerned, not concerned as in, oh my God, this is tragedy. I guess the answer would be, well, next game, we're going to open it up with just straight role-playing. You guys are at camp. Go, role-play. No, that's awful. That's terrible.
Because I agree with you.
No, you guys are under the gun to
You get to
act.
Set us up by... I mean, that's just the process of setting up the camp at the river.
When I open the game, I need to do things that get the game moving. Instead of saying, okay, everybody ready, got your pens, pencils, everyone got a bathroom, okay, go. Dave, Dan, role play.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. I think that...
That's not going
to
work.
The wrong thing for you to do there... I think there are two wrongs for you to do. Mm-hmm. One is to socially engineer perfect peace.
And I learned that not from years of gaming and not from years doing this show. I learned that with Wayne. And I tried to socially engineer a situation between our characters when we were playing Skies of Glass.
We talked about it all week. We were looking forward to it. Because, and it was the most awkward, horrible role play that I've ever seen. I don't have the years of role playing you guys do, but...
No, it was bad. It was bad.
I think on the opposite extreme, the other wrong thing you could do would be to antagonize the situation. Right. It may be entertaining, but it will also kill the campaign.
Oh, totally.
And so,
hey, Dan, go eat more people.
Yeah, exactly.
Nom, nom, nom.
Exactly. And so I think, really, the main thing that you as a game master can do...
Well, I would love to tell you what my idea is.
Well, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to.
But I'm not going to.
But I think...
Dave, I do have an idea.
Now that I understand the issue, I am not going to completely rewrite my character.
No, nor should you. Nor should either of you.
Right, but I may make some slightly different choices just to try and get these characters back on track in at least a workable
And maybe you are at a 12, which was awesome, but maybe we need you at a seven or an eight.
And on your end, I think the best thing you can do is understanding these issues are there. Just make sure we have the opportunity to explore them further. Make sure situations come up.
So excited. Pat looks like he's about to speak.
That are going to put this front and center.
When Dan finished talking, I was going to point to Pat and say, I think Pat needs to finish this.
Do it now, Pat.
My thinking is why, you know, you're talking about everything being so amicable between you. Why is there a problem with there being some animosity within the party?
There's none.
Some is good. Some is good.
And, you know, this, like, I think
cannibalism takes it to an extreme.
This is not cannibalism. This is a gnoll that ate another completely different species.
Very true.
That's the thing. Because I've been
sitting
this the entire time thinking, you know, it's interesting because Dave's character has a problem with it. My character's reaction to this whole thing was when I saw it happen,
evil.
I looked at it and saw, put this little kernel of knowledge away, thinking, okay, when I need to, the proper amount of pressure applied to Dan's character can make him eat an obstacle.
You mean everything
but the teeth.
I just discovered how I'm going to hide the bodies.
Exactly. I mean,
trust a man who keeps gnolls, Turkish.
I do have something I kind of want to say to kind of sum this up a little bit. And first off, I'll start this off by apologizing to Dan for ambushing him. And now, I did that kind of for a specific purpose when I found out that I was going to be on this show with you guys. Mm. And that is, almost every role-playing game podcast I listen to, they always talk about the key to any situation is communication.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear it all the time, and you guys say it as well. And, I mean, no offense to you guys as role-playing podcasters, but it gets almost stereotypical. It almost seems to lose its meaning sometimes when you hear it. So I thought that the best way to kind of point out how communication solves problems is to simply bring it up on the air without any prompting and just work through it. And I mean, this could have very easily happened around our table gaming, and I don't think it would have transpired any differently.
No, because we'd have been post-morteming it on the podcast as opposed to doing it on the
right.
podcast.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think this was neat. This is the first thing like this I think we've ever done in the entire run of the show is actively solve a problem on the air as opposed to just solving it around the table and then doing a post-mortem on whether that solution worked or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big difference here is this time, because Dave's here, everything he says actually is translated right.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave constantly comes up, because Dave, you listen to the show. You were actually a fan of the show before we even knew you. And Dave is always coming up to us like, you told that story wrong. You got that detail wrong. I can't believe you said, this whole topic was about me. And it's true.
Usually, you jerk, you're going to have me on to correct that story for you sometime.
Yes. Yeah, and here you are. Correct away.
So getting back to what I think it was Pat, you were saying, is I don't think there is anything wrong with the conflict in the group. I think the fact that there's some tension between Dave's character and my character.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it only adds to things. And now, of course,
especially
there's tension between everybody and Wayne's character.
Especially since there is not a single character in this party who's a good guy.
But if we continue extrapolating on our current trajectory, I think what we see is catastrophe. There's going to come a point where if Dave keeps his character at all internally consistent, he's going to reach a point where he's got a killer walk, one of the two.
Well,
it's not that I don't want the conflict. It's that Dan's people ate my people. Plain and simple.
They're not eating your people anymore.
Well, they're not, for sure.
But I gave him kind of a flashback.
Yeah.
They're eating wizards.
They've been consumed and recycled and returned to the earth.
And Dan's people lost. So
not much of a consolation.
No. So let me ask you guys this. Let's ask the other side of the coin of what Dave's talking about with podcasters and communication and such, and about how it's a good thing to have this conflict and talk. What's the other side of the coin? Can you do too much of this touchy-feely crap? Can you over-talk this problem?
Yes.
And how do you avoid that?
There's two ways. First of all, I think you can over-talk it. One is in planning or social engineering. Mm-hmm. Because it's human nature, you bring up a problem. The next thing you want to do is figure out a solution. And oftentimes in coming up with that solution, we're not just coming up with a concept or a framework for solving the problem. We're mapping out the solution.
Right.
And if that's the case, you might as well just come to a game with the whole thing pre-scripted. Everyone shares scripts, then you go back home. It destroys the spontaneity, the experience of role-playing.
You guys ever play old Western Star Wars games?
Yes.
They all opened up with a scripted intro to the adventure where every player was supposed to read a part.
We just have
the whole game be
painful. Ow.
You know, I think there's another danger of going too much of this, the other side of the coin, is that you really have to know your group. If your group is, let's face it, guys, we're kind of touchy-feely, dirty hippies here. We like to talk these problems out and such. There are other groups
to care less.
Yeah, it's just like,
that was
you got a problem? Deal with it. All right. And it's like sort of this more jovial thing don't need to
suck it up, Nancy.
That's right. And, you know, the suck it up, Nancy, that's the solution.
And that was going to be my other point, is I think you can also hit a point where you are taking this crap way too seriously. Either
like us.
Yeah. You're taking it way too seriously. You're overanalyzing it. Mm-hmm. You're
going out buying equipment and putting a podcast out about it.
Yeah. You're creating a family dysfunction where your gaming group ends up in professional therapy over a freaking hobby.
I'm going to go home and blog about Dan.
Yeah, I've already figured it out. Dave, here's the answer to your problem. You realize that you just really didn't like the rest of your tribe that much. So actually, you're thankful to Dan's character for eating them. So problem solved.
No.
Next issue.
Wait, there's a better solution. I need to eat Dan's people.
You know what? There's an even better solution to that. And this is what I was going to propose. Well, I'm going to spoil it for you.
That might be a little bit much.
I'm going to spoil it for you guys. I hope you guys can handle it. Dan's a gnoll. You're a spirit shaman, human, anger bang. Just get it out of the table, get out of your system, and you'll be done. You'll be fine. Next morning, some bite marks, a lot of shame, and you'll be fine.
I propose doggy style.
I'm betting Dan's character would heal those bite marks pretty quickly.
Yeah. I was going to make that joke. I sided against it because of my character.
But the reason I don't think what we communicate here on the mics goes too far in either direction is because, one, we stopped ourselves shy of social engineering. Mm-hmm. And in this group, given what we want out of the game, let's go back a couple episodes to setting expectations for our campaign. The expectations we set were for a certain type of game with a certain level of character depth and a certain longevity to the game.
Right.
And this type of conversation is important to that type of game. If we were playing in a group that didn't care about this, it's just like, get over it, let's roll some dice and kill some orcs, then this type of conversation would not be necessary. And in truth, I probably would have never created this kind of depth to my character to begin with. He's a gnoll. Whatever it says in the monster manual, that's my character. I'll maybe tweak it a little bit to give him some individuality. But beyond that, screw it. It's not worth it to the game. let's just get in there and get the magic axe and get out. Mm-hmm. And
oh, that's what I forgot, a magic axe. You know, and here's another thing.
We didn't go down there. It could have been
there.
Here's
another thing, assholes. I was going to give you a magic item out of this, but no, you guys destroyed these assholes. You guys, because there's this description, right?
I didn't destroy them.
There's this description. Dan's like, I jump on this wizard and I tear him apart. I rip him and these bits of him are flying everywhere. And when I'm done, I search the body. Is there anything of interest there? Anything you said? No, there's just bloody rags.
I just want to say the picture that I loaded onto your forums is entirely appropriate for that situation.
Yes, it is excellent.
And by the way, if anybody's wondering, I actually play the part of Ronald McDonald.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
I'll explain what Dave's talking about. For anyone who doesn't keep up with the forums, he did a picture summary of that scene of the campaign. Mm-hmm. I'll link it off the show notes. It was pretty damn funny.
For you new game masters out there, or even veteran ones, I'm telling you, I'm sitting here and I just cannot help but smile. I am surrounded by a group of people who we have played one game and they have not stopped talking about the game and their characters.
Well, and you know what the real magic here is?
It's D&D.
It's not just that we were this excited about a game. We were this excited about a first game.
Yes.
Which is always a painful experience in any campaign. And it was a first game that only lasted about 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give us some credit because in the history of doing this podcast, I've had a couple people front me like, oh, you guys think you're just the perfect gamers and blah, blah, blah.
Hell no.
It's like, no, this is a podcast that is a testament to our failures or ineptitude.
Yeah.
The only thing that maybe makes us different from any other failed gaming group is the fact that we're smart enough to notice our mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's not that we don't screw up. It's not that our games are great. It's that we have enough objectivity to realize all of the screw-ups and stupid things we do. And here is a game where, for once, we actually took our own advice.
Yeah.
And apparently we have pretty good advice because we created a pretty good game out of it.
And apparently we're pretty stupid because we're just finally starting to take our advice.
It just took us 22 years, but...
Yeah.
Well, the only reason that I know to bring this situation up after... Mm-hmm. One session is I've seen so many groups and been a part of so many groups where other
including
people
this one.
Who hate each other but are adventuring together because that's what loot is.
Yes.
And
plots
I know
over there, everybody's going that way.
And that's not the kind of game we're going to run. If
no,
that's
the kind of game we want.
If that's the game we were running, we would never have this conversation because it wouldn't matter.
Right.
But you know
what?
It'd be about something else. It may not be character issues.
You took my sword.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
All jokes aside,
it
could come down to division of loot. I used to know a guy who was in one of these gaming groups where they were very much, everybody played this totally hard-ass character and you just went down and killed stuff. And they got in big fights about strategy, about mm-hmm. how they were going to arrange the party and what order powers were going to go off, because they were really into the tactical aspect of play. Completely different style of game than we have. Not touchy-feely at all. It was just about kick-ass and take names, but they got in the exact same kinds of disputes. And you know what? The solutions were all very similar. That at some point, you have to have that metagame conversation.
Talk about it. Don't take it too seriously.
Don't take it too seriously. Decide your number one goal is to have fun as friends, et cetera, and reach some kind of a conclusion. And so even if you guys are just rolling your eyes at our situation, the concepts are going to be the same regardless of your group.
Yeah.
Comes down to if you can respect your fellow players enough to actually bring up a problem with them and expect it to get solved, there's no reason that you shouldn't do it because mm-hmm. the game will be much better for it. I mean, I could have sat there and just kind of suffered for the next three sessions, but what fun would that be?
Nobody wants that. We don't want that. You don't want that. Nobody wants that.
You know, I also find it very interesting that this is the first that I'm actually hearing of this problem that, you know, that your character has and with Dan.
But it's only been 2 days.
Well, it has, but it's also, I think it's completely appropriate in character because my character just doesn't care.
That's another thing I love about this group is that everyone is either chaotic neutral or evil.
I'm flat neutral.
He's
the nicest of the group.
Yeah, flat neutral is the best we
I
got
won't
going
eat
here.
People.
I tell you what, I've seen it already.
I actually don't eat people either.
I think I prefer evil groups over good groups because evil groups get shit done. Good groups talk about the consequences and should we do this or shouldn't we do this or what will people think or what will be the what will happen if we do it. Evil is like, no, I want that.
I think it's
it's mine.
I think it's important to point out, though, that when we're saying we're an evil group, it's not every man for themselves, backstab, no, claw for power, everyone just be the biggest SOB they can. It's just a point at which they reside on the morality scale.
Right.
The way we solve problems is not in a good way.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
We are the type of people that would rob a bank if we needed to feed ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, Chad, you were absolutely right. And thinking back on it, there was no analysis paralysis at any point. The only moment of decision was when I chose to roll a D20 for my own sake to see how under control my bloodlust was.
Yeah.
I would like to say something. I hope you guys don't mind me speaking on your behalf. That, you know, we have couched half the party as evil and the other half is highly morally questionable.
Yeah.
If anyone out there disagrees with our definitions of our characters and where they lay in morality scale, we don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I thought you were just about to get into the hole.
The only
I'm not going
to
say it.
Yeah. The only thing that's better than an addition debate is an alignment wank.
Oh, man.
You know, I was actually.
We already went through that ourselves within the group. We don't want anyone else.
I was actually talking to Wayne today about alignment. And the reason why people get their dander up about it so much, because you can have a dozen games, none of them have any morality or alignment scale.
Are you about to have a wank about an alignment wank?
Yes. And and nobody gets on that because it's your background. It's how you feel and where you came from and what your motivations are. Everyone's fine with that. But in D&D, alignment is a stat. It's not like writing your age on there. It is a mechanical part of the system, and thus it is subject to the same interpretations and rules lawyering and all that.
I think
it
people don't like being labeled.
You know,
well, or they disagree with somebody else's label because it gets too personal, because you are not talking about somebody's core values. If you do something that I don't like, in my mind, you're evil, in your mind, it's justifiable, and it gets to people's core values. But I agree with you, Chad, that in many ways, the alignment thing does take what should be a quality and all but quantifies it.
Yeah.
I mean, it all but puts a number to it.
You know, the alignment is a stat that is just like all the other stats on your guys' character sheets. Totally meaningless to me.
Yeah. And there was a point in our game where we debated a little bit and said, you know what? We are not going to have an alignment wank. It just does not freaking matter. It's not worth it.
That was 10 minutes into alignment wank.
That you guys are having. I have always said that I think, well, actually, I just started saying this on Sunday, is that your background eclipses your alignment.
Yeah.
The alignment is only here for a mechanical thing. If somebody casts repel evil, and know what? No one's going to cast any alignment-based spells on you guys, so it doesn't matter.
Now that we're 10 minutes into alignment wank, should I suggest we don't have an alignment wank?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, we're wanking about how we're not going to wank, so...
God, I love wank.
So we're meta-wanking.
So we'll take another week to finish that. We still have tons of topics out there to talk about we've got in the queue. Some that have been suggested by you guys, others that we've come up with ourselves and just want to get to. The one at the top of the queue is still Familiars and Animal Companions.
Yeah, we're going to have that, what, three episodes ago?
Yeah, we've been pushing it off for about three episodes.
Don't worry, you'll get bumped again.
Yeah. So, but in the meantime, I hope you guys are having a lot of fun with your games. Get on the forums. Tell us about your great catastrophes. Tell us your ideas for communicating gaming stories in a meaningful way to people that weren't there.
And if you don't, my gnoll will eat you.
It's my gnoll.
And we will catch you next time.
Anger Bang.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.